This is Whip For It Podcast.
Episode 7.
This month's episode.
Carl Over Gara.
Hi, welcome back guys to Whip For It, the podcast. Whip For It is a conversation, a collaboration, an introspection, an intervention in the local comic scene in the Philippines. I am your host, Hub Pacheco. I am a photographer and also a comics writer. And with me is Teddy Pavon, the only comic artist I've ever worked with so far. What's up?
Yeah, busy. It's been busy few months.
Yeah, sorry. Well, also been busy for me as well. That's why we've only had one episode in the last March. So it's like 3 months.
Yeah,
I've been to India and back, Jack. So, okay, who do we have this time?
Okay, for this month, we have the Carlo Vergara, a guy famous for his superhero, Zsa Zsa Zatorna.
For a second there, I thought you forgot who he was famous for.
What? No. Anyway, we interviewed... That's not funny. Everybody knows Zsa Zsa Zatorna.
Anyway, no, you almost slipped up.
Okay, anyway, in this episode, we discuss things like how he came to create Zsa Zsa Zatorna, what was his process, and about what he did, the things he did to make a comic, the amount of research he did, and basically his process.
Yeah, because he took a long time from his first compilation to the next, to the latest one, which was the Zatorna sa Kalakang Maynila.
Which is part one of three, is it?
Yeah,
part one of three.
First of three books for this series.
And I have to say, what really surprised me with Carlo Vergara is just the amount of research and effort he puts into his second book. I mean, for independent comic book creators like us, we're constantly trying to better ourselves, but for someone as established as Carlo Vergara, that's kind of inspiring to see that even though he's really already very talented and has really done a lot in the industry, he still makes an effort to really, put effort into researching and trying to make to better his craft.
Yeah, so, okay, let's get into it then.
Okay, let's go.
Okay. Hey, welcome back to the podcast. We're here with Mr. Carlo Vergara, creator of Zsa Zsa Zatorna, and with Ted.
Yeah.
And Mr. Carlo.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
And okay, so first off, much has been said about Mr. Carlo, all the books about Zsa Zsa, and just one, two books.
Yeah.
With the second one just recently coming out.
Yeah, well, it came out like
January.
January. Can you tell us a little bit something about the sequel to Zsa Zsa?
Are we supposed to be so serious here?
Just feeling it out for the first 5 minutes.
So. Okay. No, Rager Show. Yeah. For the sequel, the protagonist, the heroes, Ada, who's the alter ego of Zatorna, goes to Manila with Dodong, and essentially they're trying to make heads or tails of what their relationship is supposed to be. But then, as superhero stories go, the Zaturna Stone comes back, so Ada is supposed to be a superhero again, and then one villain after another comes in, and then there's complications in his relationship with Dodong, and then Zaturna finds herself enamored by another superhero, and then there's another superhero group that's coming to the mix, and you got one, two, three, essentially three villains, and the subplot with Dodong, and so you got this big mix of stuff that's going on.
Wow.
So it took quite a while for me to put it all together. I mean, story-wise, even before the drawing, it took a long time just to piece the thing together.
Tell us more about that process. Like, how long did, like, when did you start thinking of the story to the second episode?
The sequel. Yeah. I started 2005.
Oh,
okay. I started in 2005, and all I had were these little ideas of what can happen. And a lot of them didn't make it to the final book. I mean, they were cool ideas, they were funny ideas, but then in the end, they didn't really fit. So it was a matter of choosing which ideas you could work with and piece together into a story. So that was 2005, and then I was doing sketches, and I was doing sample pages, and then I realized that I didn't know how to make a story. I realized that when I did the first story, the first book, it was all instinct, it was all what felt right. But right now, since I want to present myself as a quote-unquote professional, true-to-life comic book creator, I thought I might as well learn hardcore
storytelling.
Yeah, so how did you go about that?
I bought books.
Oh, okay.
I bought books. I ordered from Amazon. Mm-hmm. I scoured the web. I talked to people who were into the storytelling business, particularly theater people, because they're really immersed in story structure and characterization and plot and subplot and motivation and all that. So while I was learning, I was slowly piecing the story together based on what I learned. And the bigger challenge was that since this story happens in Manila, it's a bigger place, it's not the innocent province anymore. So when you go to Manila, you get all this crazy shit going around.
It's more complex.
So it's a fish out of water kind of thing. Not so much fish out of water like when you see in the movies the province guy goes to the city and he's a stupid guy. It's not that kind. It's the stakes are bigger. The consequences are more run deeper. So I needed to go through the process of learning in order to create the story that I wanted.
But I think that's interesting. I think this is the first time I've heard of someone really educating themselves on how to build story structures.
Most of the indie creators, they just did what you do in the first Joshua Zaturna story. It's like, they draw on instinct, whatever feels right, whatever they think is, you know, the proper sequencing.
And after that, they do the same thing again, and without really just going back to the basics on what, plot, structure, dialogue.
So I find that really interesting. Yeah.
Because doing the thing on instinct is great, because it's, there's a lot of heart in that.
Yeah, it's a lot of impulse.
There's a lot of impulse, and you're just letting your creative juices running, and it's all good. However, I realized that if I wanted to do this in the long run, I needed to know how, especially if people ask me how I do it. And I just can't say, oh, you just let her rip. you just can't say that. And I realized that since I wanted to go into teaching in the future, and if I'm going to teach how to make comics, I might as well learn
proper storytelling.
Yes, proper storytelling, theory, etc., etc. But then, you know, it's a choice. If an indie creator really wants to create based on what he feels like putting on paper, then that's great. But eventually, for me, if the local industry needs to professionalize, yes. if they want to have the impression that we are a real professional industry, there has to be a professional standard.
Mm. There has to be a better refinement of stories and art.
Correct. That's correct. Yes.
I think we went through the same thing back in 2010. We were making the first issue of WIP. Well, it has structure, naman. But for me, I think I went with instinct for most part. Then, unless I feel that way.
But for the first issue, yeah, for it's the first more issue, mostly just instinct, yeah, impulse. Yeah. But now we're really trying to take a step back.
Yeah, for our third installment this year, I made a really big outline of everything that I need to get down on paper. Mm-hmm. You know, so far it's really, really
although
structured.
We don't. We haven't looked into storytelling books, but we've looked into techniques of other comic creators.
Yeah, comic techniques. I'm sure if you've heard of Scott McCloud.
Yes, yes.
And you know, I studied that like days on end. Like,
yes, yes.
Spacing and whatever in the panel, length of the time, so, all those stuff. Mm. So yeah, I think it's really interesting that even after success of your first book, well. After the success of a lot of your books, you still, you know, chose to
go back to the basics
and
learn and give yourself a good foundation.
That's true. It's really the foundation, because while I was reading all those books, I realized that the one thing that learning does for a creator is that it presents more options. It gives you an idea of it's not so much story ideas, but if you have a lot of story ideas, it gives you an idea. It gives you knowledge on how to properly piece them together, and it can help you decide whether a concept that you have for a story is good enough or not, or if it's meant for a little piece of a bigger story. You know, if there's one thing that I learned. Concretely, from reading all that, is the possibilities. Yeah. You learn the possibilities of storytelling, and it's like what David Finch said when I interviewed him. Yeah. You just can't coast. So you really need to push and see what's out there and see what you can do, and eventually, when people see what you do, hopefully you'll come across as fresh and new, and that's what this industry needs right now.
Okay. So anyway, how long did it take you to like do your research for your storytelling? So like 2005, you did sketches and you did plots, little bits, and then how long did the researching storyline take?
The storyline, researching on storytelling, the investment in books and all that, reading up and testing things and evaluating, you know, all that. I think it took me around 3 years, 3 to 4 years. And that was, of course, apart from me needing to improve my drawing. So while I was learning how to tell a story, a better story, I was trying to improve my art, because right now when I look at my book from 2003, it's like, okay, so this is the best I could do in 2003, and it's right now when I look at it, it's like, okay, I'm a bit ashamed when I look now. There are a few spots there that I really like, but then you could see the rawness in it. And when I look at it, I can see, oh, ang bata-bata pa noon, because that was like 10 years ago.
So to be fair, I mean, it's miles above what a lot of artwork right now, would you say?
Well, considering...
I mean, even in the first book, there's already a lot of refinement.
Yeah. Considering that I started drawing comics, the first comic I did was in 1993, so I started pretty early, but I didn't work on it fast enough. I wasn't doing it on a regular basis, so it was a stop-go thing. So when I start, yes, I would have improvement, and then I would stop for like a couple of years. It's not like the professionals who just do it every day, so every day they improve. I didn't go through that. So
because you were doing other things.
I had a job, and I had stuff to do. So but right now, I think my art is better, and the story is better. I've been getting feedback that it's not the kind of humor, the humor level has dipped, and that's expected. I expected that, but in terms of story, I think I did a pretty good job putting
so
it together.
That was the response so far.
It's pretty mixed. It's pretty mixed. You got the people who because there are people who jump into a Saturna story expecting humor,
mm-hmm.
and there are people who jump into the story expecting, oh, what's going to happen to these characters?
Mm-hmm.
And for those who are expecting the humor, they weren't really that happy. But those who were interested in the journey of the characters, that's they got that, and so it's really a point of view thing. It's for me trying to define what a typical Zatura story is, and a typical Zatura story is, yes, it's humorous, but that's not the point. The point is you know, I have these people who I'm trying to make as three-dimensional as possible, and you're going to follow them, and things are going to go crazy with them, and see what happens.
Sorry. I think we'll comment on the mixed response. I think that's to be expected, because the first book, it's collected, it's done.
It's a complete story.
Yeah, it's a complete arc. But
the sequel,
it's still one of first of three. So they can't. It's. I think it's to be expected. It's not really that.
Because it's not really a full story.
Yeah.
Yet.
But when I released the first book in two parts, as an indie, as an indie creator, when I released it in two parts, people were all over the first part, even though the story wasn't done yet.
They really
loved that one. And honestly, when part two of that book came around, the level of humor dipped. Even then, a lot of the good stuff was in the part one. And then, you know, right now, you know, I have part one. Right now I'm going to say that the level of humor is not really going to change. It's still going to be that way. Because for one thing, if you want to tell a story in parts, you need to make things as consistent as possible. So right now, I'm working with this level of humor. This is the kind of humor I'm going to be working with, because it's what I feel works best for this story. So if there are people out there who are expecting a more riotous, outcome, I have to apologize. You might not get it. But it'll still be there.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, as I said a while ago, my focus is in trying to tell a good story. And in the end, for me, that's all that matters.
Okay. Yeah, and I think going back to what you said about educating yourself, could you just give a few examples of what kind of books did you buy? Can you just give a few, or...
Okay, wow.
Right on top of your head.
The authors... Okay, Plot and Structure by James Scott Bell.
Mm-hmm.
I got... there's this book called The Third Act.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, I love that book, The Third Act, because what it does is it helps you end your story.
Oh.
I mean, it's like you have a lot... You're high concept, I want a story about this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the process, and then eventually, okay, how am I going to end this?
Because you got so many things already juggling in there.
That's right. So it's that book that focuses on the third act. Like, how do you properly end the story by looking back at what you did during the first and second act, and how you could maneuver your way to a proper ending. And I love that book. Another book is... whoa, there are quite a lot. The Scene Book. That's an
The Scene Book.
It's a book about scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So it breaks down what is a scene, what are the parts of a scene, what
mm-hmm.
should every scene have.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what it says is you treat every scene as an individual story, with a beginning, middle, and end,
right,
with its own conflict, with its own
mm-hmm.
level of tension, etc., etc. And how dialogue builds scene, how setting builds scene, and all that. So it's those books. At the start, I was going for the general, like plot and structure, and then as I went on, okay, I need to learn more about characterization. So what references do I get? I need to know more about setting up the scene. What references do I get? So I wanted to be as intensive as I could.
Okay. I think in a couple of interviews you mentioned before that you think that Jaja was an accidental hit.
Yes.
And could you just explain why you think it?
It's an accidental hit because when you're I'm sure you guys, when you created Work in Progress, you're just doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
And for all the indie creators out there, we're just doing what you wanted to do. And pretty much when we started in 2000, I know, when we started in 1993, we were just like you guys, just doing what we love. And when I did the Zaturna book, it was with the same mindset, but it was different. It was, I find, a parallel with what Jerry Alangilan did with Wasted. Because with Wasted, he essentially was trying to go through a cathartic experience. He was trying to let go of some deep, troubling emotions. And he did it through the violence. I was going through pretty much the same thing, but I chose to go humor. And because you're in that state of mind where you're not really thinking logically, you're going by instinct. But for me and Jerry, it was a different kind of instinct because it was driven by strong emotions. So you're not really thinking about, okay, how are people going to respond to this book? You're not thinking, I could always say, yeah, I planned it all along. This is going to be a movie. This is going to be a stage play. They'll love it. I never had that. All I wanted is, I needed to get this book out. I needed
a way to express yourself.
Yes, and I needed to release whatever it was that I was feeling. So whatever happened after that, when Tanghalang Pilipino called me up, they wanted to do a stage play, and then when Regal Films called me up, and there were two other movie outfits who emailed me and wanted to do this. Oh no, there was three other film outfits. So, you know, it's not something that you really plan to do unless you decide to set up a business and create comics for the purposes of adaptation. You know, that's different. But for now, we're just...
Yeah, I think... Sorry. Am I correct in assuming that... Or is it right to assume that you felt the same way back in... Well, I don't know. I did.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, we were going through it after college.
Something we wanted to express because we were just recently graduated college and we wanted to do something that reflected
that time.
Okay.
So that's essentially what our book is about.
Okay.
So, in a nutshell, something like that.
So it's like semi, there's kind of like a semi-autobiographical thing going.
Yes, but you wouldn't know who it is unless you're close to me or something.
Okay, so the people who read this and they're close to you, they know what they're talking about.
They've been teasing me about it, and I said, no, that's not you, that's not her.
Okay.
So something like that.
Okay, just don't put too much.
Yeah, no. I mix up a lot, so people don't know who is who. They just assume who that's them, but I just not talk to you.
Yeah, well, what happened to me was, you know, people were saying that I was Ada. And yes, there's truth to that because I needed the central character for me to channel whatever emotions I had. But then, you know, it's like what Neil Gaiman said, you need to put a bit of yourself in every character so you know where they're coming from, you know what they're about. And so I got a bit of me in the giant frog, I got a bit of me in the zombies, I got a bit of me, you know. So, yeah.
But was it the same feeling when you did Purgatory?
Purgatory was different because it was an exploration. Wanted in Purgatory was, again, for those who don't know, is a comic book about a straight guy and a gay guy who were best friends, but then eventually fell into a relationship, and the relationship fell apart. It's based on two real-life stories, one of which happened to my friend, wherein, you know, he was in college, and... he was gay, and he got into a relationship with one of his straight friends, and it was an actual relationship. But then the relationship fell apart because the straight guy eventually couldn't deal with the fact that he was in love with a homosexual. And So it was something I wanted to explore. It didn't happen to me, but I think it was my first step into trying to understand what people are about, why people do things, mm-hmm. why people think and say things, which I'd like to think characterizes the kind of stories I like to tell. It's not so much about, you know, Budget is great when he does his tres plots. Yes. I mean, his concepts are great. I go more into the, I'm sorry, for me, it's more about how people interact. So if you notice in my work, it's really mostly two people talking.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And trying to see, you know, but and debating and
yeah, where
and,
they go from here,
etc. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that's my strength.
Okay. And I think from here, can you tell us a little bit something about, I think the heyday of Zsa Zsa was in, correct me if I'm wrong, was it in 2006 when all the musical, the movie came?
When it exploded, yes, it was around 2006. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you tell us a bit more about your involvement with the musical?
Yeah, did you have any creative involvements with those adaptations?
I had no... I only had one call with Tanghalang Pilipino, and then the next time I heard from them, I was sitting in the theater on opening night. Well, I did attend the press conference,
uh-huh.
but beyond that, I had no idea what they were doing.
So you didn't see any script.
I only heard samples of the music, but then the music was sung by the musical director and not by the actors because they were still casting the actors at that time. So I only had a taste of what the music might sound like, but then it's different. I mean, it's not the real music. It's just a sample. And I didn't know how they're going to do the giant frog. I had no idea how they're going to do the transformation. I didn't know how they were going to pull it off. But then, since I spent a lot of years in theater, I was an actor in Monique Wilson's New Voice Company, and I did a couple of independent productions in the past. You tend to be familiar with the magic.
Their process.
The process and how they're able to make people suspend disbelief and, you know, and believe what's happening on stage. It's much more difficult for movies because movies is really an interpretation of reality. You have to see it as real. Whereas theater, you imagine, and that's where the magic comes in. And I think that was the problem about the movie. I did. I'm co-credited with the screenplay for the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that it got nominated for an Urian Award. So, in terms of the actual treatment, production design,
yes,
I wasn't part of that.
Oh,
I did give suggestions for the cast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when they were trying to cast Queen Femina, they couldn't think of anyone, and I suggested Pops Fernandez, and it just so happened that the manager then of Pops Fernandez was also the manager of Chocolate and Alfred Vargas.
Okay.
And so it kind of fit in.
Mm-hmm.
But then, beyond that, I just learned later on that they got Rustam and they mm-hmm. got Josh Padilla to play. And even Joel Lamangan, it was suggested. I admittedly had reservations because the original director was supposed to be Mark Maley.
Mm-hmm.
But then it was given to Joel, and I had my reservations because I didn't know how he could handle a superhero movie.
Uh-huh.
I watch Joel Lamangan movies, and his strength is really character because he's a theater actor. So that's his strength. And when I saw the Zsa Zsa movie, I saw that. I saw... that was the great thing about that movie. That was the one thing that I liked. The interaction between Ada and Dodong. It's exactly how I think it was supposed to be. But when it came to the action scenes, when it came to the special effects, like, oh, please. Okay, can we just go back to the character? That's the best part.
So it was a facepalm moment, or like,
It was a facepalm moment, especially towards the end. I mean, there was this scene there. Of course, this was like 2006. It's 2012. That's 6 years ago, so I can tell him. I can say these things. There was one scene wherein Okay, Zsa-Zsa, when oh no, Saturno, when she was able to punch the frog, and the frog essentially flew from that punch, right? So so you established that, and then later on, when she was fighting Femina, she had a tough time picking up a car. So I'm like, you're able to punch a frog and let it fly in midair, but then when you try to pick up a car, you have a hard time doing that. And then later on, Queen Femina, so they have this, okay, it's Queen Femina versus Saturna, they're fighting their martial arts thing in front of the church, etc., and that's great. And then later on, when Femina defeats Saturna, we find out that Femina can fly into outer space. So I'm like, okay, why didn't you fly before? it's those things, yeah. But those are the little things that I think that, you know, us geeky people would point out, you know. But yeah, again, when it comes to, when it all boils down to the story itself, I mean, the interaction between the two characters, the main characters, I think Joel did a good job with that.
Were you fine with all those nuances?
Yeah, like, at any point did you start thinking, like, the way Alan Moore does about film adaptations? Did that ever cross your mind?
Well, yes, it actually crossed my mind a lot at the time. It was... I'm coming from the standpoint that when you produce art, or when you create something, you are allowed, and put it out there. Mm-hmm. Essentially, what we're trying to do, we want to sell our stuff. We want people to like our stuff. Essentially, when you put your work of art out there, you are giving others the opportunity to interpret it the way they see fit. So if I read your comics, if I read Work in Progress comics, I'm going to look at it in a different way than another person. And in a way, I am adapting, quote-unquote, what I read into my own experience. Someone else will be doing a different adaptation. Transforming a comic book into a movie or a play is another form of adaptation. So when you present a work out there, you're giving, okay, read it, interpret it. That's your signal. Of course, because it's a business, you know, there's of course that money thing going on. You have to have that. But then I won't really stop anyone from adapting. Because I gave it to people.
Yeah. So you're fine with it?
I'm fine with it. I mean, I think it wasn't Alan Moore who said, I'd rather gut my eye with a rusty hanger. Yeah, it was something like that. I'd like to think I know where he's coming from, because, you know, why are you going to adapt something when the comic book is...
Just for a comic book.
That's it. Yeah. But then it all boils down to a choice. And there are people who by nature aren't comic book readers. I have a friend who said that he's bobo when it comes to sequential storytelling. He just couldn't get into it. So it's for those kinds of people. And there are people, for instance, there are people who don't really read novels. I like me. I have a hard time reading novels. So when Hunger Games came out and people were saying, you have to read the book, you have to read the book. I'm like, why do I have to read the book?
It's already a movie.
Yeah, it's already a movie. They have to do their job and make sure that I, the moviegoer, understand it.
Yeah,
so it's about that.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm not much of a novel reader either. But I can take a short story, but, you know, for novels, it could take me a while.
It takes a lot of work.
So it depends on the people. But, you know... And that's an interesting thing you said about adaptation, you know, because it's, for us, we feel that among all the local comics creators here, among all the local comics creators here, you're the only ones, well, right on the top of our heads, that has gone from an indie publication to mainstream, right? It's a movie, a play, a musical.
Yeah, and you're the only one who can actually talk about, you know, adaptations not from a hypothetical point of view, because you're the only one who's done it. So I think we wanted to ask that because your opinion can have more weight than most indie creators, since we're just on the hypothetical stage, like, you know, like what if our work gets translated and stuff and adapted.
Yeah, yeah. And you serve for the short time, and you know, it's from when it first came out, and it was such a hit that, you know, you said that a lot of people called you up to, you know, turn it into a lot of other mediums.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on that?
I think I was lucky. I think I was lucky because I think the proof there would be if it can be replicated. If, because we all know that the Zatura movie did not really make it that well in the box office. I think during the Metro Manila Film Festival, it came out of 7 or 9 films, it was, you know, in the bottom 3. So commercially, it did not succeed as much as, I mean, I hoped, or at least, and maybe I'd like to believe Regal would have hoped it would have succeeded. But I think really the proof is if it happens again. I don't know if a movie producer or a TV producer would be interested in adapting Saturna. But I think, you know, for someone to be an authority in something, I think you need to go through it over and over again. So because it's a different ball game. It's like, you know, you're sitting in a meeting and you're talking, okay, what can we do, what can we not do, who do you want to be in this, and then you go through, oh no, we can't have this person because this person is tied into this network, etc.
All those things
and then you get into the nitty-gritty of the contract and for me, because I legalese gives me a headache. I mean, I really had a hard time with that.
Eddie, you're soon to be a lawyer.
Wow.
Not yet.
Please be. please. The industry needs you.
I still have the bar.
Yeah.
So that's still a long way.
Yeah, and I think for the industry, it really would help if there was there were professionals who aren't really comic book creators but are interested enough in the medium to know its potential.
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. But he draws your book.
Yeah,
he doesn't count.
No, but he'll do the job eventually.
In the side.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's nice. It's nice to have gone through the experience, but it has to happen over and over again, I think. Not just with me, or, I mean, with other creators. It has to happen.
Yeah. Okay. So, where do we go here? Okay, so I think let's go back a bit. When I met you again 2 weeks ago for Fully Booked, for that event for David Finch, I wanted to ask you then, but I couldn't because it would be for the podcast. So I wanted to ask you, what's the difference between self-publishing then, like during the time
of Alamat Comics?
Yeah, during the 90s. And during the time of when you first came out with Purgatory, that was 1999?
2001.
Sorry, 2001.
Yeah.
Sorry. And so what's the difference then and now? Seeing all the, you know, we're still self, me and Eddie are self-publishing, indie, creating, so what do you think is the difference?
Oh, there are a lot of differences. Number one, we didn't have a lot of venues. So we did our comics, and not a lot of people saw it.
Okay.
When we did Flashpoint, we didn't even have a convention. In 93, 94, it was just, okay, Platinum Comics and Galleria, okay, let's bring all the comic book creators together and have some kind of mini convention.
We had a
mini convention, and people were passing by and they had no idea what we were there for. Back then, same as right now, a lot of the indies were doing it Xeroxed or Ashcan style, and you know. Apart from that, the internet hadn't been, at least it hasn't reached. Right. The World Wide Web wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
So the World Wide Web wasn't there yet, so promotion was, okay, so how do we do this? Hardly any kind of promotion. Hardly, if any at all. Thirdly, basic interest. There were people who were interested, but it's not like right now we're in people outside the comic book circles are buying.
We're getting normal people or like just mainstream people who have no idea about comics. They get to go to conventions now.
Yeah, they and comic book creators are not seen as strange people anymore. Right now, I mean, when you do comics, I mean, especially if you're a published author, you're wow. I mean, right now. You get the wow. Before, it's like, okay, so what do you plan to do with that? You know, that was then. But okay. Right now, okay, wow. And that's a great thing. Uh-huh. It's the fact that so many changes have happened between then and now shows that comic book industry in the Philippines is going in the right direction. What's needed is for people in the industry to realize that and milk it for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. It frustrates me sometimes because late at night I would think about these things. Like, okay. How can we expand this? How can we make people more excited? And number one, it really boils down to what we're putting out there. Because right now, I guess the question number one is, when you create a comic book, are you creating comics? Yes, you're creating comics because you love it. But then it's that mentality of, I eventually would want to have this book published by a major publisher because I want it to reach nationwide. Mm-hmm. And to be able to do that, you have to have material that, you know, will sell.
Yeah. So commercially viable.
Commercially viable without sacrificing your artistic integrity. That's the tough part. And I think it all really boils down to an honesty because when essentially, and I think all the other published comic book creators out there will agree with me, is that when you create your work, you're just being honest with yourself. You're being sincere with yourself that this is the kind of comic book, this is the commercial comic book I would want to read. Mm-hmm. It's not the indie comic book that I would want to read. This is the commercial comic book that I would want to read. And it's not that, oh, I want to do this comic book because it's so cool. Because nobody has done this yet. It's going to be great. It's going to be marvelous. I'll be great. You know, it's not that. It's the sincerity is still there. The honesty is still there. But the end point has to be higher. I think that's it. The end point has to be higher. Because if people are to notice comics, comics creators need to shout a bit louder. Uh-huh. They need to be a little bolder. They need to take more risks, I think. The Comic-Con is great, but in the past 5 years of Comic-Con, how many books have actually moved on from indie to mainstream? There's hardly, but you know, ideally you would have at least, in my dreams, I imagine it, like 10 published new graphic novels are out there in the bookstores, and it's a great scenario. But yeah, I think comics creators need to take more risks.
I think it hasn't really taken off to the point that we are starting to produce commercially viable comics is that even though Comic-Con has gotten bigger, like the number of comic book creators have risen through the years.
And the attendance has gotten higher.
Is that most of these indie creators just don't last long. I mean, in the sense that they'll do like 1 or 2 years and then most of them will just stop from there. So we never see that follow through because I think when you start doing comics, you always start out doing first the things you like. And as you progress, you start to realize that, you know, you need to do something better. And it takes a certain number of years to reach the point where you understand that you need to do something both commercially viable and at the same time, something with integrity.
That's true.
And I think that's the reason why we haven't reached it. It's because the fallout rate of indie creators is as big as the number of people who do indie comics.
Yes.
So we never reach the point that, you know, we don't have indie creators who last long enough to actually come up with those things.
Yes, that's true. That's true. There are the indie creators who do it really for purely for passion, mm-hmm. and when the passion goes, then it's done, and that's fine. But then there are those indie creators who wish they could continue, but they could not because of the time invested. It takes a long time to draw. Mm, it takes a long time to put together a story. But then I'm going to get married, have kids, have a family. I need to wisen up and be an adult and, you know, have a great job. Which is why, I'm coming from the point of view that when we create more commercially viable comics, it becomes something that indie creators can consider as a possibility. If there's more commercial product out there, me, indie creator, eventually can say, hey, if I work on this hard enough, I might be able to earn a decent living from this. Because if there isn't much material out there, it's going to be a fluke. But okay, there's Carlo Regatta and Budget Nine and Paulo Fabregas, it's like, what? 3, 4, 5 people. So it's a shot in the dark. And at this point in time, and given the economy,
it's going to stay that way.
It's going to stay that way unless people, there are select, the chosen few, who will say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to invest my time and effort. I'm going to get a book published out there. And eventually, you know, people will see that, you know, it's about numbers. You know, you get more material out there, you know, people are going to take notice.
Okay. Because it's, I think there's still, what Teddy said, still trouble for, you know, some creators who, their interest wanes after the first
years.
Book. After a few years of doing it. And, you know, you're still doing what you did for the first time around, so... Right, like you said, sir, they don't take much risks, and they don't really explore what else could be done. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, speaking from experience, when Teddy and I decided to print that a printed version of that comic, of our comic, I remember telling him that I don't want to Xerox this. I don't want this to look like a Xerox comic. I don't want it. It'll look the same as everyone else. And I want to print it, even if we print it at home, I want it to look different.
Stand out.
It stands out.
Yes,
so
yes.
That's our risk. And eventually, for now, it's working.
It pays off because most people who buy it compliment the material because we chose good paper and we printed it on inkjet.
It's only inkjet, so if it gets wet, it's done. So
it looks good.
And what you did actually, right? It makes a lot of sense, especially since there are a growing number of indie creators out there. And you really need to stand out. Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah, well,
I never thought it would be inkjet. Oh. I never.
We didn't either. So,
but it's nice.
We experimented on a couple of printers, and but the point is, I really told Daddy I don't want it to be Xerox, be an Ashcan style. I don't want to be just like, you know, the same, say all the other monochromatic. Well, it's still monochromatic.
Mm-hmm. It's blue, blue and
so red. Just those are just the little things that we just wanted to point, because if you say that some nights you wonder how we're gonna uplift the comics industry, Teddy and I, whenever we chat online almost every night, you know, that's one of the topics that that's always recurring.
We don't talk about bettering the industry. We just talk about how to better the.
But in general, it goes there. Eventually, it'll go there.
Not that big. We don't think.
Yeah, not that big. But that's one of my main concerns. Like. If we're stuck, sometimes I feel that the local industry is in a rut. I mean, it's growing. Yes, okay. it's getting better by the year.
Is that just that the comic industry seems to be falling into a pattern? Is
a plateau?
Right? No. It's like we've found like a certain groove template, I guess, of how to do indies, and then we just stuck to it.
Ah.
that's why we seem to stagnate a bit.
Or well, one of the things that I've learned is that there are creators who would want to jump into mainstream published work, but they're afraid.
Oh, because
they're afraid. They're afraid to have to deal with a company when they're really comfortable just doing their own stuff. They fear the iron hand of an editor. They fear
compromise.
A compromise. They fear getting the end of a bad deal. It's really about doing your homework, and there are a lot of Philippine publications out there from really, really great authors, and just by looking at the shelves alone, I don't think they got a bad end of the deal. Yes, so it's just really just doing your homework and reading the contract and making sure that everything's okay. A contract is really for the protection of both parties. It's not a one-sided thing. That's what I heard. They don't want to relinquish the freedom of doing it on your own. Which is, I mean, it's nice. It's nice. But in order to contribute to the wider, to the bigger scheme of things, I feel that it doesn't really help a lot.
Eventually, you need to have more creators who would be willing to submit their works to publish their works to big companies for it to actually start. For the companies to start taking interest.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know, I must be honest with you. Even though I'm doing this Saturno book right now, there have been a lot of times when I just wanted to give up.
Oh.
There were a lot of times I just wanted to say, "Oh, what am I doing? Spending like 6 to 8 hours every page when I could spend 6 to 8 hours making real money." And it's a great, great time investment. And I've always said that making comics is a crazy hobby, because you spend so much time, you spend so much energy. But then, it's about, it's why do artists make art? Because they can't help themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's that urge to create.
It's really the urge to create.
And one interesting thing I saw at the back cover of One Night in Purgatory is the price. There's a US price, and so was it available?
No, it was during the time when we were doing. It was delusions of grandeur.
Okay.
We were thinking, maybe one day some foreigner is gonna pick this up and gonna ask, okay, so how much is this? Okay, so there's a dollar price, right? but most probably that's gonna be I think right now, given all the technology that we have and all the linkages that we've been able to make, I think a dollar price on a Filipino comic book is not too far away.
Mm-hmm. So. Could you just tell us a bit more, just tell us a few stories about what it was like back then? You said you had a mini convention when you gathered all the creators. How is it different? Well, how is it the same, or how is it different from the bigger comic cons that we have right now?
Primarily, it was the mini convention was along the corridor. It was really directly in front of Platinum Comics.
Platinum Comics, So it's not around now.
It's not around now. Well, I haven't been to that yet. I think it's not around. Uh-huh. So there were booths.
Galleria?
Galleria. Uh-huh. There was little booths, and then so we had our artwork there, and there were the comic book creators, and we were looking over each other's booths. So what do they have? And we're comparing art, comparing character designs, and all that. So because we were mostly strangers. I mean, in the past, I didn't know who Bajatan was. I didn't know who Gilbert Monsanto was. Those were the there was Exodus. There was Alamat 101, and we were Flashpoint.
How did you get together in the first place?
How did you get to know?
Who organized that?
It was the owner of Platinum. I'm sorry. My memory fails me. I forgot the name of the owner of Platinum because he noticed that there were a lot of people who were wanting to make comics.
Uh-huh.
And we're actually making comics, and so there was let's bring them all together.
Okay.
And Although I don't know exactly who's, I don't know if it was really his idea of, or one of the creators just, you know, gave him a hint, or but it did happen. And like I said a while ago, there were so many people passing by and they didn't know what it was about. They just saw drawings and, you know, in the booths. They saw things and then, ano to, ganyan, etc. And sana mabili to, and of course, parang, a lot of the stuff that was being displayed were just conceptual art. There wasn't any comics. They were just dreams that hopefully people will take notice of. And and so since we didn't have comics and when it was all done, we just packed up and
it was just one day.
At the end, if it was a public relations campaign, it failed. It failed. It did not do what it was supposed to do. Elevate the awareness of people for the new Filipino comics. Oh, it didn't do that. And then after that, we were still doing our own, pretty much our own thing, because again, we didn't have internet, so there was no social networking. There was no. I started to become friends with Budget and the Alamat group, and we would hang out again in Galleria in the old Cyber Cafe, and we would be talking shop, talk quote unquote. I use that loosely because there was no shop to talk about. and then people were coming in. There were new guys. Say, could you look at my artwork?
So you were getting new people.
We were getting new people in, and which was strange because on one end we were flattered that people were coming to us, and then on the other end, okay, who are we for these kids to come to us and ask us our opinion? But I guess that's what I was saying. That's like what I was saying a while ago. It's about staying there and just keeping at it and
work ethic.
Maybe even if you're not making comics, if you're just in it and you're like what you guys do, you have podcasts, you're even though it wastes quote unquote, it takes up an X amount of time, it's something that you want to do. And for us back then, there were a lot of creators who came and went. There were really a lot of creators. Some of them even went as far as producing a full-colored, I think I can say the names, Taekwon Dogs. Mm-hmm. You've heard of Taekwon Dogs?
Not.
Okay, Taekwon Dogs, it was a concept book. Mm-hmm. And Taekwon Dogs was about?
Like dogs gather against.
Oh, yeah. It was martial dogs who
do Taekwon Dogs.
And it was a concept book. It was a full colored printed. Mm. It blew our minds back then, because who does this? Where's the comic book? It was just a book, and it had the character profiles. It had the villain profiles. It had all that. Mm-hmm. And there was never a comic book. And it was one of those early. It was one of those early chismes things that were going on in the little comic book industry. Who made this? Do you know him?
There was an author.
I forget the name.
Okay.
Because you know you have a book called Taekwon Dogs in full color, massive impact, and then you never hear from it again. And that's just one example among other examples.
And
for some, they went into it, tried, and then went into another industry. You know, it's like comics for them was transitory. It was a way to train themselves for another career. For some, it's just they lost interest. For some, they just, you know, like me and you know, the rest of my kabatch, you know, you just continue on. So it's really, I know, it's still a choice thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it's still a choice. Because well, like I said, Daddy here is a law student who's gonna take the bar soon, and me, I'm a photographer by profession, and you know, still have our own things. It's still, but you know, it's still a choice that we still do this, And we find something in it that we just can't let go.
And yes. So we really force ourselves to spend time on it every week just to come out with page a week. So at least we don't lose that momentum.
Yeah, he just emailed me the page for tomorrow, so it's, just in time.
It's really great that you guys are a tandem, like once a writer, once an artist, because, you get, you feed off each other's energies.
Yeah, we can't do it alone.
Yeah. It's like budget and culture. They kinukulit nila talaga yung isa't isa just to get things done. When you're alone, it's much...
The motivation is harder.
It's a lot harder. Yeah. It's like self-service. You really have to get yourself going by yourself just to get
So how do you do that, since you mentioned it?
Oh, I fail miserably. I'm sorry. I fail miserably. Because, you always dream of the time wherein this could be your full-time job. Mm-hmm. But then, you have a full-time job. And, of course, I'm not complaining about my full-time job. But the thing is, if I want to do comics, I have to devote time after work when you're already tired. And when you're tired... It's hard to draw. It's hard to think. But you gotta do it. So it's especially at my stage right now where I'm trying to elevate the quality of my art. It's I'm still not... if I'm a mold, it's still not set. My style is still not set. I'm still trying out new things. I'm still experimenting as I go. And that's hard when you're trying to make a good comic book. Day in and day out, and when you have a full-time job. So I don't really do that well. I mean, I fail.
Yes, sure. Okay, so, but what solutions do you do to battle that?
I go back to, I think about the story. I think about what the characters say. I think about, sometimes when I'm thinking about the story, they reenact the scene and they say something different in the scene and that's a better version, and that excites me because they're coming up with new things, and because new things come up, that's when I get excited to see it on paper, and that's what gets me going.
I think I think to wrap things up for you, Sir Carlo, do you consider yourself, or how do you want to develop yourself? Do you want to be seen just as a comics creator, a comic creator, or since you do a lot of things, you do theater, you do voice work, you write, you're a graphic designer, you art direct. In the end, what do you want to be seen? Do you want to be seen as a comics creator only, or like an artist?
I honestly don't know, because for most of my career I was a graphic designer, but people know me as a comic book guy. So at this point I really haven't decided. I really don't know the answer to that question, because everything that I've been through in my career, I've done PR writing, I've done voice work, I've done acting, I've done comics, I've done art direction. It's all about communicating ideas and making stories. So if ever, that's what I am. I like to tell stories in whatever form. There was a time I was contemplating on going to songwriting, because that's another form. And maybe I will. It really depends, because that's a whole new different discipline. But then it all boils down to, if I have a story to tell, here it is, hope you like it.
Yeah, and you did say that your discipline in theater integrates in what you do as you write the story for Zsa Zsa, and it all plays together.
Yes, it does.
All those disciplines, it integrates together.
Yes, it does. Even when I do my PR write, even when I learned as a PR writer, even what I learned in marketing, which is my college degree, all of that goes to my comic books. My frustrations as a graphic designer go into my comic books. It's all there.
So okay, I think that's about it. So what can we expect, since you just came out with the first of three books in January? When can we expect a follow up, or do you have any new projects aside from Zsa Zsa that you're doing?
I really need to finish the book this year, because it is the 10th anniversary of Saturna.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's been 10 years. So I need to finish that, and then after that, I'm going to decide whether I should continue comics or not. Yeah, well, I do have a lot of stories. I still have a lot of I have a lot of concepts. I have a lot of concepts in mind that I would like to develop into stories. Maybe one day, some artist out there would want to draw what I have, draw a story that I've written, because you know I can't draw all of them. We'll see what happens next year. All
right. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Sir Carlo.
Thank you so much.
Hope to see the next installment of the first of three books, the second of three books.
Yes. Thank you.
All right, and to all the other stories that you may have. Carlo Vergara.
Yeah, we hope you were as entertained to hearing that as we were interviewing him.
Yeah, he's a really cool guy to talk to.
Yeah, an interesting point about the commercial viabilities of comics. Like, he does have a point. Like, while we do have to make comics that we can be proud of, we do have to have a certain consciousness of, you know, knowing what the market wants and doing something we can live with.
Yeah, it's sort of a compromise, because you know it's not entirely about a story that'll interest you, but you know it has to have a certain universality to it as well.
Yeah, if we want to really make an industry out of it, it has to be something that can be sold.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be a very
Constrained,
yeah, and it's a very insular. It shouldn't be so insular. It can be insular to a certain degree, but not too much that it's sort of alienating or
that doesn't care about people or what they think. Well, anyway, that's something we all can think of and dwell on.
Yeah, we can dwell on that for as long as we should, because we are all comics creators and comics lovers.
And still trying to figure out how to get this industry going.
Yeah. And with that said,
we're going to plug a few events that are happening this May.
Right. Next month. It's still April.
I said this May. This coming May.
All right.
Okay, never mind.
My bad. Somebody called my mama.
Just plug it.
Okay. First up, we have Free Comic Book Day. It's gonna happen on May 5 at a lot of places.
Yeah, we have Comic Odyssey.
Yeah, Comic Odyssey, they have, apart from the usual Free Comic Book Day stacks they have from the various US publishers, they also have FCBD Comics with a K, number one. It features one-page stories.
It features us.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Conceited much?
Yeah.
No, it features a lot of, really a whole lot of local creators.
Artists.
Yeah, like Manix Abrera from Pico Machine, and who else? Who else? Who else?
You don't have to name everybody. It's a long list.
No, there's a few. Who else? Romel Omeng, Stanislaw, Ed Tadeo McCoy, and of course, Silent Sanctum, What's Up Chapel. A lot. Andrew Villar, of course, is the editor of it, Budgetan. And of course, we're there too. So yes, grab that at Comic Odyssey on May 5 if you're in the area. And also,
Comic Sub.
Yeah, the store that they took my name without consent from me.
They can do that. You're not a copyrighted work.
I am a hub. I am the hub, only hub.
Yes, go on.
Okay, Comics Hub, they also have their own Free Comic Book Day anthology. It's called Comics All-Star. And they have people like Carlo Vergara,
who we just interviewed.
Yeah, who we just talked
about that.
And who else? Gio Paredes, Sherry Baitzamar, Carlo, Doc Carlo, Jose San Juan, Paulo Fabregas, all those guys, Budget and Kajo, all those guys, they have stories there. And okay, Comic Odyssey has that. Comics Hub has that anthology. But our favorite store, my favorite store of all time. Oh, I was a little bit loud there. Of all time, Planet X Comics. Oh, they're not going to be left out. We, meaning me and Teddy,
yes,
have our own comic.
Wow, you dropped it from there. Wow, can't believe it.
We have our own free comic book day one shot. It's going to be up there.
Yeah, which we'll announce next week.
Because it's not done yet. Thanks, Ted.
Printing is hard.
Right. Or you mean making it is hard?
Both.
Right. And you haven't done any of those.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay, getting back to the point. We have our own one shot, and it's not that long. It's only a few pages, but still, it's an all original, all new, nothing Whip related. It's an all new story, and
it's gonna be exclusive to Planet X.
Yes, because we love it there. I love it there because it's the best, the best.
Okay. So
whichever place you go to this free comic book day, whether it be in Comic Odyssey, Comics Hub, or Planet X, yeah, you'll be sure to have a unique comic from out of all the usual stacks of...
Yeah, and of course, if you want to know more about these events or details, or just want to know more about the comic industry, you could always go to
flipgeeks.com.
Yep.
How can I say that any clearer? Flipgeeks.com.
You can say it clear by saying it again.
Flipgeeks.com. Okay. That's it for that. Next up we have is Summer Comic Con this May 26th at the... where is it again? Bayanihan Center. I answered my own question, thanks.
You're welcome.
Bayanihan Center along Pioneer Street in Mandaluyong. It's gonna be there all day. Do check us out. We'll be there at the Indie Changge booth,
as well as a lot of other comic arrows.
Yeah, but do check us out first.
Yeah, since you're listening to this already, so
yeah, this is our show.
Yeah, as usual, you could log on to the Comic Con website for more info on that, or you could also log on to the Flipkicks website for that.
Yeah, Comic Con. It's Comic Con with the K, K O M I K O N .org. ComicCon.org. And of course, again.
The what?
Again, flipgeeks.com.
Okay, yeah, flipgeeks.com.
Right. And I can't say that any clearer. Okay, next up is, of course. Oh, a bit of sad news. Because this guy here has got a lot of shit to attend to.
Yeah.
So meaning, what that means is this podcast will be put on hold temporarily.
Yeah, for the time being, we'll be concentrating on...
We? Or you?
No, we will be concentrating on producing the Whip Comics.
Oh, right.
Comics. Because that's all we can really manage for the next few months.
We or you?
Okay, me. But rest assured, as soon as things clear up and schedules get clearer, we will try to get back to this podcast as soon as we can.
We or you?
Me.
Yeah, fussy. No, it's just, you know, it's a matter of, you know, Teddy taking the bar and all that, so he has to review and everything. And I'm no law student, but I'm pretty sure that it's gonna take a whole lot of effort and time.
Yeah, and as much as I want to continue doing this podcast, at the end of the day, this is just really a hobby. If we got paid for this, it would be a whole different story.
Yeah, we'd be doing it every week.
Yeah,
like Mark Maron.
Yeah, but again,
Colt Cabana.
things, priorities have to be taken, and sometimes things have to be, what's the word for it?
Sacrifice?
Yeah. So yeah, I do apologize that we do have to make some I have to make some constraints. But it is what it is. Okay. But and we will try our best to still come out with comics.
No, no, I mean, in the end, that's the whole point of this anyway. So yeah. if this is getting in the way of that, then maybe you can just, you know, dial it back a few steps and then...
Yeah, but we're not abandoning it. Let's get this clear. We're not abandoning it.
You are abandoning it.
I'm not. We're going to get back to this once everything clears up.
Yeah, and how long? We'll just give it a rough timeline.
We'll be done by... We'll have something by the end of the year. That's all I can say.
Right.
Okay.
No, it's all good. So there. I hope you enjoy our last episode for now.
For now.
And remember... Wait, what do they have to remember?
I don't know.
No. Okay. So, that's it for now. I'm Hub. I'm a photographer. Oh, and you can finally reach me at... Oh, you can finally see my stuff at hubpacheco.com. Mm-hmm. I finally have a URL. So, it's hubpacheco.com.
Yay. So, should we wrap things up now?
hubpacheco.com.
Wrap things up.
hubpacheco.com.
Okay.
Okay. And, of course, as usual, a disclaimer. A warning. Not really a warning. A disclaimer for this.
Alright. And, as always, the views and opinions stated within this podcast are those of the people who said them and may not reflect the views and opinion of the comics community at large.
Really? 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 Really?
Just say it. Enough.
Fuck it. This is it for you.